The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Boston Red Sox walk it off, beating the Marlins in a series opener by a score of 2-1. The win takes the record up to 67 wins, 56 losses on the season. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Terry Cushman Jr. and Doug Acheson, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? Go to Bastards of Boston Baseball for great written articles. Now, the first thing I think what I like to start with quite often is the starting pitcher. And Giolito, I think a lot of us were very curious about what we were going to get. He was coming off that terrible, terrible outing against the Padres. And I would say that he bounced back tonight tentatively. And the only reason I say that as a tentative is because there was a ton of hard contact tonight. Giolito was giving up a lot of hard flyouts, a lot of doubles, and so the box score looks great. I mean, 6.1 innings, 7 hits, 1 base, or 1 ball for 1 run, 5 strikeouts. But, God, there were some scary little flyouts, groundouts, all of that. At one point, Augustin Ramirez, his name is, in the 5th inning, smoked a 110-mile-per-hour groundout. I mean, it was a bumpy ride, but ultimately he got the outs. That's what mattered. And he gave the Sox a chance to win. And when we did, what did you guys feel and think watching Giolito go out there today?
Yeah, it was like a mixed bag because his stuff looked pretty good, but it seemed like every time they connected, it was just hard. And we had 5 doubles, which is crazy, but he seemed to, you know, not get rattled, which I always like to see. You know, you're not going to throw a no-hitter. And, you know, if you can just weather the storm a little bit and get out of jams and not have all those hits turn into runs, then that's all you can ask for from your starter.
So, you know, I don't think it was that bad of a start. It's not like they were stringing together several hits on him. And, you know, maybe he's not all the way back yet, but sometimes a bad team is just one step closer to getting you there. So I haven't really been down on Giolito despite, a rough recent outing. And, you know, the schedule is only going to get easier. Only 3 teams in Major League Baseball have an easier schedule going forward than the Boston Red Sox do. So Giolito just isn't towards the top of my list of concerns, but the offense, they were punchless for a while, and Alcantara's stat line for the game, pitching line, looks pretty good, but, you know, Middlebrooks was kind of all over him. You know, he got lucky a couple of times, like Willier had a middle slider and he was underneath it and whiffed, and that could have easily went 400 feet. And so, we'll see. Maybe Alcantara needed the Red Sox, you know, to get better. I don't know. You could have it both ways.
Yeah, no, he looked great tonight.
He looked vintage. He looked absolutely vintage. And all I could think was, you know, my dumb mouth where I'm saying, oh, thank God we didn't bet on that guy. Thank God we didn't go out there and get this reclamation project, maybe in the offseason, but certainly not for the deadline. And, you know, to be fair, his deadline, or post-deadline, I should say, hasn't been great. But, I mean, tonight, he looked unbelievable. 7 strikeouts, only 2 hits allowed, 1 walk, 1 run. He looked phenomenal. And, you know, you can say, sure, he was missing his zones a fair amount sometimes. There was stuff that the Sox should have been able to capitalize on, but at the end of the day, they didn't, you know? And this is, as much as we like to rag on it, this is a big boy offense. There's a lot of big players in there. And we saw pretty much this strong top of the lineup, you know, Anthony, Bregman, Duran, Story, Abreu, with the way they've been hitting the ball, you'd think, oh, that top five should be able to do some real damage against this guy. And they really weren't, you know. So hats off to Sandy for a phenomenal outing. I've seen some people say, hey, maybe he's a guy to target again for a trade in the offseason. I don't necessarily know all about that, but I mean, he showed us up. Thankfully, the second six ERA pitcher that they brought out tonight was pitching exactly as expected, which was badly. If it weren't for that, I mean, poor Simpson got absolutely bombed. He's lucky it wasn't a homer.
I was looking at the, you know, how their bullpen was, because admittedly, I mean, I probably couldn't name five players on the Marlins outside of Alcantara, Yuri. That might literally be it. There's got to be one or two. If I look at them, I'd be like, oh, of course. What I was getting at is, I looked up, I'm like, well, where do they rank in MLB? They rank 14th, you know, they're literally middle of the pack. So I don't know if that was really a questionable decision. Apparently he does have better numbers against righties. And where do you think the Red Sox bullpen ranks?
I mean, I would imagine the bullpen is pretty good.
I might have screwed that up. Yeah, it was set to strikeouts. All right, Now let's look where we're at. So the Marlins are 19th. So that's I would say less than middle of the pack.
Yeah.
And the Red Sox are third. Yeah. So I'm glad I noticed that.
But where are we in strikeouts, actually, out of curiosity?
17th.
Yeah. So
I thought we were the 17th ranked bullpen. Now, and then another thing, I said in the war room, I said, well, Whitlock had part of the eighth. He probably should have came out for the ninth, really. You know, he only got that last out of the eighth. And I know I was screaming from the mountaintops, don't use him for more than an inning, but I might have done it tonight. And he got out of that inning fast.
Yeah.
And then Chapman comes out for the ninth. So I'm like, if we don't get this run, and I didn't really think we would, I'm like, well, who's going to close it out? It probably will be Hicks. And then who else do you have? I mean, they hadn't gone to Justin Wilson, I don't think. Or did they?
Yeah, he came in earlier.
He was the first. Yeah.
My bad. So I don't know. I don't know who they would have went to. Weissert would have been available. That hasn't worked well in extras for him.
Maybe Matz.
Okay. Okay,
yeah,
Matz.
Yeah.
Forgot we even traded for him, but yeah. Yeah, he would have been an option. So I just thought it was going to get real dicey after the ninth, and I didn't know what to expect from the Marlins, really. But yeah, that lefty that Nick mentioned came out. He walked the bases loaded, I think.
Walked two, yeah. And then hit Duran. It was actually Duran squared for bunt. And it like banged right off his shin. And I was thinking to myself, like, you know, that's so funny. You don't see that too often, that a guy squares for bunt and then just wears it right on himself. You know?
I don't think he could move. Like,
yeah,
I just think he might have been able to hop.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that was literally his only play there. But
right.
Yeah. So, and I was nervous about this game. I did say in the war room, I said, you know, around 6 p.m., I said, you know, I really think this game's a toss up. I didn't know if we would necessarily lose, but if Alcantara was on point, I think it could have went either way.
Yeah, I know, you were definitely right about that. And I was thinking the same thing when we brought Chapman in. You know, you bring Chapman in for the ninth, and the confidence must have been high that we would finish it in the ninth. But I thought, you know, I thought we would, and I thought that was the right play. When you have the 1-2-3 coming up, I thought, you know, bring Chapman in, shut it down, make sure you get to the bottom of the ninth still tied, and hopefully your best hitters will win the game.
You could have also brought Chapman out for the 10th, because he only had 8 or 9 pitches as well. He had a pretty fast inning. So That it would have been interesting to see the way Cora played it, but I would have lost my mind if it was Hicks.
Yeah, you know, one thing that's really nice to note is just like for tomorrow's game, something to keep an eye on is Wilson and Whitlock, both very efficient, only 8 and 4 pitches respectively tonight. So you love to see that. I mean, I love a quick outing. Even Chapman only at 11, and he looked just as good as he has been. And can I just, again, just give credit where credit is due? This is why having discipline at the plate is so, so important. Anthony and Bregman saw this guy melting down, and they just said, you know what? If you're going to give me a free base, I'm going to take it. And it's beautiful. You know, the other night I talked about how sometimes you see a guy in the box and he's swinging like he doesn't have faith in the guys behind him. You know, like, I need to get a home run right now. I need to tie this up or I need to win this. And Anthony Bregman, they did not look like that at all. Those are seasoned professionals. And it's so funny that they're on completely opposite ends of the rookie to veteran sort of timeline. It's just awesome to see. I want those two leading off our games for a long time to come.
I agree. You see how well it is, how well they work together, how well Bregman is bringing them up. I mean, Roman's at bats are a thing of beauty to watch.
They are, and we've heard all along that Tristan Casas had such elite plate discipline, and he did, you know, for the most part. But you're really seeing it with Roman Anthony right now. That dude's plate discipline is elite. We kind of saw it a little bit with Christian Campbell as well. I mean, he wasn't swinging at junk. He just, after a while, his timing was just out of whack, and he just was extremely tentative at the plate. And so if you could just get Campbell fixed, man, you know, and even Meyer, I mean, most of our kids they don't swing at junk. That Raphael is the only one.
Yeah, yeah.
He had an at bat earlier, and Cotillo posted it. It was a 10 pitch at bat, which was nice, because I think that at bat might have turned the tide for Alcantara, because he was mowing everyone down. And then I can't remember if that was the sideways inning or not, but he wasn't lights out anymore after that. But Rafaela, only like 2 or 3 of the pitches were legitimate strikes. Like, it should have been a walk if Rafaela could walk. I'm sure Anthony would have if he faced he walked the twice. Same. He would have, yeah. So Rafael is the outlier of all the young guys.
Just, I think it was 8 pitches, and like 8 pitches in, I think it was still 0-2.
Yeah, or something. Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, but props to Anthony for getting that inning started on the right note. And
both runs. He scored both runs. Mm-hmm. I mean, walks are huge. It really shows. Walks kill you. When you're a pitcher, walks will kill you. And especially against our team, we can actually have some guys that can run.
Definitely. Been impressing me, because everyone's talked about his discipline, which is amazing, and his power, which is amazing. But I've been really impressed by seeing how his defense has developed so quickly, you know, from that first outing where, you know, he botched the ground ball, and immediately, I mean, he has just gotten such a good handle on the corners. And honestly, on the base paths, that one run that he scored, the first one that tied up the game, he really hustled. That was some great base running. He saw a ball that was hit right to the corner in right field, and he was able to round second, third, and come home on it. And I was afraid that we were going to have maybe a second and third situation. Then you're counting on another hit or something. Just, he's really been impressing me. I mean, Anthony is everything we could have hoped for, and thank goodness for it. Came at the perfect time for us.
Yeah, 5-tool. Mm-hmm. Legitimately, yeah. I mean, he looks like he could possibly be a future Gold Glover.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you've got the extension out of the way. I mean, everything right now with Roman Anthony is just, he's just living up to the hype and then some. And like I've said, I do think we are an October team this year, and what an opportunity for him to really introduce himself to Major League Baseball. I'm sure the nerds in other markets have a clue as to who he is, but I don't know. We got someone in the chat right now. His name is Mouthpiece. M-O-U-F, and then peace is P-E-A-C-E. So I like the wordplay there.
I like that. That's funny.
And I tell you, I know you don't like rookies starting the season, but I mean, it's I think it's at least worth thinking about if he started this, if Roman started opening day on the roster. I mean, his WAR is like what, 1.5 or something, like. We'd probably have at least 2 more wins, maybe.
You know, it's funny you say that because I gave the take just in the last show. I don't want to see the kids start the season. And maybe it was the right call with Anthony. Like, maybe that was the right call all along. And you can make the argument, maybe they let him cook for maybe 2 weeks too long in there, yeah. Down there. But
I mean, there's always outliers. I mean, he's the number one prospect. You know, most of the time, you're probably right. But sometimes the number one prospect is just ready.
And then if he gets the rookie of the year, I don't know. He gets an extra year of arbitration and I think one or two other perks. We get a draft pick, which would have been nice. So maybe that makes it worth it anyway. But I don't know. I just think it almost validates my thoughts of leave him down there for 6 weeks or so.
Let him cook a little bit. Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, cause like I said the other night, if people missed the show, as soon as you hand them the keys on opening day, let's just say April 1st, it's usually a few days before that, but on April 1st and say, this is your position. You're the future for the next 6 to 10 years at that position. Just all the pressure in the world. But if you send him to Worcester, let him cook, let him tear the cover off the ball, let him be pissed off for a while that they're still down in Worcester when Abraham Toro is playing first. And, you know, not that impacted Anthony directly, but when you got a trash player playing your position, you know, and then you come up with a little bit of a chip on your shoulder. And Anthony wasn't, I wouldn't say he was lights out right away. I think he did scuffle. He was hitting under 200 for at least a couple weeks, but never at any point did we looked at him and said, he's lost at the plate. This guy, he should get sent down. We definitely said it with Tristan Casas at times. We said it with Campbell until he did get sent down. And, you know, Duran went up and down a couple of times before he had his breakout. So I don't know. We'll see. And Campbell, I did see a tweet earlier. I think in the month of August, he's got an OPS north of 900.
He's killing it down there right now, which is awesome to see.
I think you call him up. It needs to be called up. We've mentioned the trade value and you're going to ruin it or whatever, but I don't think you can trade a right-handed hitter with high upside. You're just so lefty heavy right now. And well, luckily he's young. He's 22 or 3, I think.
Yeah.
And Anthony's a reverse splits guy. As we know, I can get his exact stats up here in a minute, but so he's in the lineup every day and doesn't seem to, like I said, the dude doesn't scuffle. So yeah, get Anthony up here. I mean, Toro, I mean, he had a home run the other night. I think we lost the game 7-6. That was one of the Houston games, but
then he had a well hit line out tonight too. A very nice hit in the fifth inning that, you know, looked like it had a good chance and it was just a good defensive play. But I agree. I mean, Toro, I feel like we've seen enough to know who he is at this point.
Right. What we're saying about him is, oh, well, he had a nice hit tonight. That's like what you say about Toro now, and that's supposed to be a good thing.
Exactly.
But I don't see why Campbell, but with over 20 games started at first at this point down there. I mean, it's what they sent him down because he wasn't hitting. So let's send him down there so he can get hitting. He can learn first. He's learned first. He's hitting. I don't see what they're waiting for at this point. I think he needs to be on the playoff roster.
Well, you can let him cook for a little while. I mean, there's no urgency to bring him up, but if you want to boost your chances in October, having a plus bat, if he's back to hitting at that level, is a good thing. And I tweeted out earlier, and, you know, luckily it didn't age well. I said, we've only won one game since since I keep calling it the laptop controversy, but the iPad controversy. We've only won one game since then. And, you know, Toro has been relatively cold. Romy's been kind of cold. And I think, and a lot of people misconstrued that tweet as me saying that we got caught doing something illegal. We did not get caught doing anything illegal. The Red Sox are allowed to do that. But maybe we're a lot more hyper-focused on it than other teams are. And we've gotten to be somewhat elite at picking up tells from opposing pitchers. So now that it was a controversy for at least 24 hours, I think now our opposing teams are like, oh, we got to tighten up here. If we're out there and we're lax, the Red Sox will pounce on it. And I think guys like Abraham Toro and possibly Roman Anthony are going to be victims of us being exposed now. Maybe they're not going to have those clutch hits anymore. And maybe they were some of the prime benefactors of it.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. You know, it's one of those things where you know that all of these teams in the MLB, obviously scouting is getting more and more high tech every single year. They're finding new ways to go out there and find little things, little tells, ways that they can exploit the opposing pitcher's weaknesses. And you do have to wonder, like, we know that every team out there is looking for tells. But it is interesting, like, are the Red Sox doing something different? Like, it was something, like, the side-by-side? I don't know. You never know. It kind of sucks to have, like, the camera in the game just show you game prepping down on the sidelines, you know, right over your shoulder. And suddenly it's like, whoa, man, can I get a little privacy here? I'm trying to have a conversation with my hitter and whatnot. You know, you never really know what the other teams are doing because, well, typically the cameras don't go into the dugout with those teams. So it is interesting. I mean, it's certainly something that if I was Cora, I'd be a little irked about.
In the way, like, if you watch the clip where that went on to live TV, and I think, wasn't that a Fox game too?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think Nesson has their cameras ever positioned there. Maybe that's by design. I mean, Alex Cora probably does have the pull to say, hey, I don't want cameras here, here, and here.
Definitely.
But he doesn't have that kind of pull with Fox. But the way that the hitting coach or whoever he was, the way he kind of like pulled it down like abruptly, it looked bad, you know? And so I think that didn't help when it started going viral, but I don't know, but we've definitely been cold and this, we only put up two runs, and typically you're going to lose those games when you only put up two. So we'll see if we can heat up. I mean, Trevor Story had a big hit, and you know, I wasn't sure if perhaps he could be a benefactor of our elite abilities of, you know, picking up tails. It's funny, I play a card game basically at the national level, and you're supposed to read your opponents, but I don't. I just it's not part of what I do. I run my offense in that game the way that I run it. So I can see how other teams may not be as focused as the Red Sox are, you know, and it's really valuable to have a guy in your dugout that can pick up on that, you know, whoever they are, you know, and you can have certain staff members in the dugout, like Jason Veritek isn't the bench coach. He's not the first base coach. He's not the third base coach. He's got some other title and he's allowed to be in the dugout.
Yeah.
And he's not the guy that's, you know, that engineered, you know, whatever that was, but other teams could have a Veritek type guy doing it.
Most definitely. And I'd be surprised if they just had one. You know, I imagine that everyone probably up in the boxes, up in the, you know, all around is staring at screens, you know, just trying to look for those little things. It was so interesting where when they did flash the screen that we were showing our hitter, you know, it showed like the pitcher side by side, one side labeled like fastball, the other labeled changeup, I think. And it's just amazing, just the little nuance in stance and everything, how they're holding their glove, how they're holding their shoulders. It's like, God, that is just, I mean, that's magic to me. That's really amazing stuff. You got to tip your hat to these guys who have such eagle eyes for those details.
Yeah, it was like one of those side-by-sides, like pick the differences in the two pictures.
100%.
You know, you don't see any.
It just imagine, like, only not even a handful of years ago, they were using hand signs, the catcher was, and... You know, so now you adapt to the pitch comm thing, and already teams have adapted to finding advantages still. So, and most people would have thought that the pitch comm would eliminate that. But when you lose something, you just start focusing on other things. And that's what we've done.
For sure. I heard one of the new things, actually. I heard it on a broadcast a week or two ago that when you have a runner on second now, the big thing is you sort of look at the pitcher's grip, you know, you see the back of their hand, and especially apparently with guys who throw split finger fastballs, that is a very noticeable grip change. So a runner on second specifically versus that type of pitcher it's a total game changer.
Yeah. They have to angle their gloves to not expose the grip. Yeah. We've seen that a couple of times this season.
It's really interesting. You know, one thing I'd like to say just to switch topics slightly is, going back to what we were talking about with the bullpen, right? How many of these guys have been great? And I saw someone in chat, What the Ruck, said, let's not forget Slayton is coming back soon. And that's going to be a huge, huge boon for us. You know, you figure Isaiah Campbell is probably the one to go down. Slayton takes his place. I believe he threw a bullpen just today. And I know that he's throwing live batting practice on Monday. So that's, you know, he's, I think, coming back at an accelerated pace, even more than we were really ready for, which is awesome to hear. Obviously, hopefully he doesn't rush back, but that dude has been such nails for us when he's healthy that you've got to think, I mean, this bullpen, all you need out of the starting rotation, give me five good innings, you know, and after that, it's a luxury. And we sort of saw that today. I really liked Cora's decision. I think Giolito was at about 92 pitches or so. He got the first out in the seventh inning. Graham Pauly flew out. And then Dane Myers got a single. And Cora was just like, you know what? We've got Wilson ready. Let's go to Wilson. And I thought that that just played out absolutely perfectly. We have so many guys in this bullpen that you trust in high leverage situations at this point, especially with Slayton coming back, that it gives you the luxury to say, you know what? This is a close game right now. Giolito is probably done. He gave us a pretty good start. Gave up a hit. Let's bail him out. And sure enough, you have a guy come out, and he does exactly that.
Yeah, double play first batter.
It helps, obviously, that he's coming back. I wouldn't throw him directly into the seventh and eighth innings, though. I mean, you can kind of ease him in. I mean, you have Mats, Whitlock, and Chapman, if you need to go 1-2-3 like that. You've got Weissert that could pitch you an eighth inning if Whitlock's unavailable. So I just hope they manage him the right way, but it certainly doesn't hurt. I mean, all last winter, I mean, we had two or three guys on this crew that said potentially Slayton could be the closer of the future. And I don't remember if I was one of those guys, but I was definitely open-minded to it. And, you know, I think the expectation was that Chapman would be pitching the seventh and eighth situationally until about halfway through spring training. And then Cora named him the closer. And he hadn't really been a closer since 2021, at least for a full season. So, you know, so there was a lot of high expectations for Slayton. And he pitched okay. I mean, he did scuffle here and there. And then the injury happened in late May. So it's crazy to think it's almost September now and you're just, I don't know, a week away from getting him back.
Yeah, I mean, Chapman's been maybe the best closer in the league. And at the beginning of the season, through April, people were saying Slayton's probably going to be our closer. And that's how good he looked. So, I mean, if you get him back and he's 100% feeling like he felt before, that's huge, huge, huge.
Who's the closer in 2026?
I doubt it's Chapman.
I hope it's Chapman.
Oh, I hope it is too.
I think it would take if you want it done fast, it would take a 2-year deal. I would do that. There's other guys on the crew that would be hesitant, but I would do it. And even if you lose a little bit of confidence that he's no longer a ninth inning guy, he can move around. And the first thing he said when he came to Boston, he goes, I'll pitch wherever they want me to pitch. And you know, that's what you want to hear.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
He's probably excited to be on a winning team.
You know, I'll tell you who it's not going to be. It's so funny because I remember when I was, you know, trying out for this show and whatnot, we were doing all the back and forth just in the interviewing process. I remember, Terry, you told me one thing you've got to be prepared for in a role like this, you know, talking on a podcast, you've got to know how to take an L. And one L I will gladly take is I was like, oh, you know, I feel like Hicks. Really? There's something to work with here. You know, that dude could surprise me. He could surprise us all. Relievers are incredibly volatile. We all know this. But like when we first got him, I was like, oh, well, maybe he's a project. Maybe he's going to be our closer next year. He's our plan for when Chapman leaves. I'm no longer even remotely close to comfortable with that scenario. That's for certain. I would love Chapman back on. I would offer a similar deal, if not exactly the same, to this year. I mean, I don't know why he wouldn't take it necessarily. He's going to be 38, I believe. So I don't think he's necessarily looking for a 2 or 3 year bid. Maybe he is after this year. You never know what his personal ambitions are. He could be a guy who says, I want to pitch until I'm 45. But, you know, as it stands, that dude's legit. And I am so, so thrilled to have him on this team.
There will be a team that gives him 2. So, and he might do it. I don't see why he wouldn't, but you know, in 38 years old, that's how old Koji Uehara was when he threw the final pitch of the 2013 World Series. So Chapman's just going to be one of these freaks. You're probably never going to see another one like him. If Mariano Rivera didn't exist, you might be talking about Aroldis Chapman being the greatest closer of all time. So
he's been throwing 100 for like 15 years.
Yeah.
It's honestly crazy.
I think he's hit 104 one time this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So he doesn't average that, but obviously, but he touched it just to remind everyone. And yeah, so I would do it. And I mean, why not? What's the risk?
Yeah.
We're the Red Sox. We have the money. I mean, that's what we've been 100%. Saying. And if we're going to get into this, you know, this new era where the kids are up, Meyer, Campbell, assuming a resurgency, Anthony, I mean, next year, the password totally early. I mean, spend a little money, Henry. You've got to. This is the time. The core is here. The young core that we've been building up for years is here. They're delivering. You just got to support it with a starting group of veterans around them. Chapman has been amazing. What I loved is earlier in the year, we sort of saw a mixed closer situation where Chapman and Slayton being opposite hands in the pen was used to great effect. And I agree with you, Terry. I think that there's no reason to rush Slayton back because there's so many guys here who I have faith in. I have faith in Whitlock, have faith in Weissert, so long as he's getting adequate rest. Just move Slayton into this pen and say, you know what, man? Take it easy. You know, no reason to Devin Williams him, right? You just say, here's a low leverage situation. Let's see what you got. And tell him, just do you, man. Throw it as good as you can. We'll see what you got. We'll evaluate. If you want to get back into a high leverage spot, you earn that. And very well in October, I could see him back there.
Yeah. And then don't blame yourself about falling for Hicks. He's very handsome and he throws 101. Could have happened to anybody.
He's got a great head of hair. I'll give him that. Yeah, that's does. You know, that's one thing you can't take away from the guy.
He's got a lot of guys to lean on, though. I don't know if Chapman's that type of influence back there. He seems to vibe well from what I saw in Atlanta. Like, the, everyone in there loves him, but I don't know that he's watching guys, you know, throw their side sessions and say, hey, you know, did you, could you think about this? But Whitlock's a veteran now, I would say, and, you know, a proven commodity in the bullpen. And, you know, had some high spots as a starter. I mean, he wasn't a complete dud performance-wise. He was durability-wise, but we all know he's a reliever at this point. And, you know, there's some other veteran guys in there. I'm sure Matz could be a, you know, helpful for the remainder of the year. I don't know if he's going to be back. But, yeah, so one thing I want to point out, and I think I'm missing at least one player in here somewhere. But let me do the math on the fly. Let's see. That's 60, 90. Let's just call that 110. 120 million almost coming off the books this year. Now, one of those guys is Bregman. He could opt in. I doubt that's going to happen. You're going to be signing him to a new contract. But Giolito comes off. He's making nearly 20. I included Devers in there because we haven't really replaced that money, and this will be the first winter without that money being on the books. Bueller, 18. Well, I shouldn't say 18 million because every other start now he's going to get 500. So 500,000, excuse me. And then Chapman's making 10. So that's almost 120 million coming off the books. So John Henry better spend some money. And even the money you have remaining, I mean, Story and Yoshida will have 2 years left. So that money will be coming off. You don't really have any long-term money anymore besides Roman Anthony, Garrett Crochet. Thought I was getting my Garretts mixed up. And, you know, Rafaela and Campbell are making okay money, but nothing consequential to the roster.
Yeah, it's a really great point. You know, we need a closer. I mean, obviously, you take that money, you get a closer. You've got to lock up Bregman at this point. I mean, the class is so good right now. Free agency, I should say, is so good right now for starting pitchers. There's a lot of really fun names on there, whether it's the stars that I've mentioned in the past, like Valdez or Suarez, or even a guy like old Chris Bassett, who's, you know, old, might take a 1 year, 2 year deal, you know, pitching very well this year. So it's going to be a fun winter, but you need to lock up the offense because that's not the type of thing you're really going to be able to go out and buy aside from Bregman. Fortunately, he did just launch his own beer brand. We saw he's very comfortable here. I have no doubts that he loves Boston. He loves the city. He loves the culture. He loves the team. But of course, money talks. So we need to just give him a competitive offer that makes him feel comfortable in saying, you know what? My future is here. Because at this point, that dude's got to be our third baseman for a long time.
Totally agree. And I don't – do you think like a player like that would – how our season ends would play into if he – like if we get – if we take a deep run, would he be more likely to, you know, come back?
You know, I think with Bregman, I don't want to like psychoanalyze the guy, but I almost feel like the journey maybe matters more than the destination.
Yeah.
If we have a good season, which so far I would say we have, and we end up finishing out the rest of this season, we get a wild card or even a division if we want to get fantastical with it. I mean, the Blue Jays are playing great, you know, so we'll see about that. But, you know, we make a playoff run. So long as we get there and we play good baseball and we have good vibes in the clubhouse and the organization, I think that's what matters more than like we don't necessarily need to get to the ALCS or anything like that. I'm going to say.
Right. But you know, it's just like he's won his whole career.
Oh yeah.
You know, for him to take a little bit extra money to go somewhere and just not win, it would be tough for a player like him to do that, I think.
Here's some extreme pessimism for you if you're hardcore pro Bregman. All winter long last year, we heard that he wasn't going to take a short-term deal. You know, and he stayed out there on the market until a week or so before pitchers and catchers reported. And so I think he was a little bit annoyed that he had to sign the 3-year deal with the Red Sox. Granted, the AAV is among one of the highest in the league at $40 million. So that took a little bit of the sting off. And I've said, this is the deal I'm willing to give him. I'll add 2 more years to the existing deal for $30 million apiece. Okay? So he's got 2 more left at 40. Add the other 60. So that's what? 80 plus 60, 140. You add the 40 that he made this year. That's essentially a $200 million deal that he, you know, that he essentially will have had. And that probably, does that sound reasonable?
Okay. At just a glance, I would say so. Yeah.
Now, the one guy that's going to say that's extremely unreasonable is Scott Boras. He's going to be like, no. That dude was essentially your team captain. He was super clutch. He had his best year against lefties. He was your assistant hitting coach for your kids. This guy is so valuable.
As he should.
And he's worth $240 million. And then what's John Henry going to say to that? You know? So,
John Henry, at this point, he's kind of an enigma in a lot of ways, where that dude, I don't entirely understand him. Some owners you have a pretty good read on. John Henry, I think I do. And then he does something that just sort of flies in the face of my expectations.
So I guess what I'm getting at is, at a minimum, expect Bregman to opt out. And if the Red Sox sign him, it won't be until in or close to February again. But there's one team right now that's scuffling bad, and they were the best team in baseball for most of the season. That's the Detroit Tigers. How much remorse do you think they have right now that they didn't give him that extra 7 or 8 a year for 6 years? It was 6 years, 171. Bregman took 3 years, 120. I think there's some remorse there. And I think the Tigers might be like, you know what? We're not making that mistake this year, because perhaps that mistake cost us going to the World Series this year.
Yeah, so there should be.
So again, I'm not getting married to Bregman. If a crazy deal happens, I'm not going to go off the rails and bash it, you know, Tony Maserati style, but I'd rather not be stupid. We've got stupid money on the books right now with Yoshida. I don't think Story's going to have another year this good in the next 2 years. So I don't know if that still qualifies as stupid money, but you've got a couple of contracts that have been painful that are coming off. Why add another one? Because I don't think Alex Bregman's going to be very good in his age 35, 36 and beyond seasons. So I just rather be the adult in the room. Go get a Christian Walker type guy that can play third base and do that.
Yeah, I think the counter to that is just like, if we think we can win a World Series before Bregman gets to that age, then when he does get to that age, you're fine with it at that point.
Perhaps. I don't.
I mean, that's. I'm not saying that's like, you know.
Yeah.
Likely, but
I mean that
would be the hope, right? If you do sign him, that's what you would hope.
That's kind of an old school mindset, but that. Yeah. You know, teams have operated that way.
For sure. And then, you know, by the time that he does get to the point where his contract is bad, you know, Yoshida's gone at that point. You sort of make a couple of trade-offs just internally, I suppose. I mean, my only fear is, like, without him, you're looking at a free agent class of, like, Gleyber Torres. You could say Yoan Moncada, Max Muncy, the old one, not the new one. So, like, there's a lot of not so great options, I think. And I wouldn't really like to like relegate Marcelo Meyer to third base either, which I know is a possibility at this point. You know, if Bregman does leave, then our infield next year could be Campbell at second base, Meyer at third, and Story right between them. And to me, I mean, that's probably a worst case scenario. And it's not the worst case scenario to have, but it's certainly nothing compared to the best.
Well, Eugenio Suarez is a free agent as well. So that's another potential target. And I would love that. Bregman or not on the roster, I would love Eugenio Suarez to be here. But I don't know. Maybe you trade for that third baseman and that's how it happens. But I would just say this. I've sat through a lot of winters. And they've been very disappointing. So I don't get your hopes up too much on Bregman, because if they could extend him, and apparently conversations never happen. So, but I just feel like, it would have happened.
Well, you know, one thing that might help genuinely is the fact that even on his current deal, I believe there's quite a bit of deferred money, which is interesting. And I like that he's willing to do something like that. Maybe, I mean, as much as I've ragged on the Dodgers for what they did with that Ohtani contract and whatnot, if Bregman is the type of guy who is willing to take a big old contract and spread it out over 20 years, I mean, if he's willing to do that, I'm more than willing to play that game, you know? So if that could soften the blow of, you know, a huge amount of money coming out of Henry's pocket, maybe that could be some additional incentive. You know, that's got to be the hope, you know, at least. But you're right. He's going to have a lot of suitors. You know, you mentioned American League teams who needed a third baseman. How about the New York Yankees? We know they would love to have Bregman. They traded for McMahon because they couldn't get Eugenio. You know, and McMahon's a nice third base option. I'm not sure if he's necessarily the caliber that they wanted. We know the Dodgers earlier in the year expressed pretty much explicit interest, stating it plainly. Yeah, Bregman's the type of guy we'd love to have here, obviously, because he's a superstar, you know. So it's going to be tough. And then a team like the Tigers, maybe they look at this year and say, you know, if we didn't have such reservations on Bregman, maybe we could have went further than we did, assuming they don't win the World Series this year. Then do they go into this winter and say, you know what? Balls to the wall. Let's throw everything in the kitchen sink at him.
I think if you think, and I don't know if he does or not, but if you think Henry actually cares about the fan base at all, like, I don't, it's hard, like, because I think this one, it would be tough for him if we let Bregman go. I think the fan base really, really likes Alex Bregman and really wants him back. And if we're just not doing anything again this winter and we just let this guy go, I mean, it would, the Red Sox Nation will not be happy.
Well, and especially, and
I don't know if he cares, but if he does.
You know, if we do go forward with a Jaren Duran trade as well, both of those in the same exact, imagine a winter where we lose Chapman, we lose Bregman, and we lose Duran. I mean, that would be an uproar.
Yeah, definitely. It could happen.
It would almost feel like the 98 and 2004 Marlins, you know, when they and ship them all out. But and Nick, the point you made earlier of the market being weak, that only plays into Bregman's favor. That only makes him the premium now. So, and possibly difficult for the Red Sox to sign. And he's already said, and we know that it's meaningless because we watched how the Vladimir Jr. pursuit played out. He did say he's not negotiating until October. So, I mean, or probably November rather. So unless the Red Sox pay whatever the insane buy it now price is, you know, you just, I don't know. I would be pessimistic.
Yeah, we just got to hope that he and Anthony can, you know, bond over a hatred of ketchup. You know?
Yeah.
I saw that stuff before.
I am 1,000% with Roman Anthony. I am not a ketchup guy.
Really?
Yeah. I like mustard and relish on my hot dogs and hamburgers. But I'm a texture guy, so it has to be light. I don't like my burgers messy and mushy either. you know.
That's so fair.
I'm a big ketchup guy.
Yeah. I like ketchup. Oh, you know, on my dogs, I just do mustard for the most part, and sometimes, you know, like a chili sauce and onions. But yeah, on burgers and fries, I'm a ketchup guy. I'll agree, you know, the one caveat with ketchup is it kind of makes everything taste like ketchup. Yeah, you know, so I get where people are coming from. But you know, yeah, they were saying I think the line was like, salsa is better than ketchup, it's just science, I think I saw was the clip they were saying.
You know what? It is. I'm on board.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I had a great like Tex-Mex burger one time, you know, jalapeno salsa on it. It was pretty good. So I'll be willing to talk with him about that. You guys have any other closing thoughts, or should we look at the pitching matchups for the rest of the series?
Let's hit the matchups.
Yeah. Sure. So tomorrow we have a 4:10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time start, and that will be Cal Quantrill versus Brian Bayo. On Sunday, we have a 1:35 p.m. start, and that will be Jansen Junk versus Garrett Crochet. And again, I said it last time, I'll say it again, Jansen Junk. Props to that dude for having a real baseball name.
Yeah, that sounds like a 1920s name.
It really does. How are you guys feeling about this remainder of the series?
I feel great. I feel great about it. Me and Charlie were talking about it last night. You know, you take our three best pitchers, all coming off of losses. I like, you know, I like the way Gio looked tonight. I think Bello has a real bounce back game coming from him. And I'll be in the house Sunday, so I'm hoping it's a potential sweep.
If we, well, yeah, so I was going to say if we do drop a game, it would be the Bayo game. But I don't know. Quantrill just hasn't been pitching well. He's essentially a journeyman type guy. Came up in the Padres system and just really hasn't done a lot. Hasn't been able to pitch five full innings his last couple times out. Got tuned up pretty good for seven runs by the Astros. And I kind of hope he gets destroyed because, you know, I don't appreciate what he said to Reese McGuire about the.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought that was him.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, yeah. If that was like 2 weeks after the incident, the creepy incident that McGuire got caught being involved in. yeah. I'm not even going to say what it was.
It was awkward thing.
Yeah. And I mean, the second the Red Sox acquired him, like Twitter was on fire with puns from whatever that was. But when Quantrill went after him, it was like 3 or 4 years, maybe even 5 after that. I'm like, dude, just let it go.
I know.
Don't be the ex-girlfriend bringing up crap from several years ago. And so I hope he gets destroyed, and I hope the Red Sox players make inappropriate hand motions to him as he walks off the mound.
Yeah, we'll see him when he gets back to the parking lot, you know, how he's feeling after all that. No, I agree. I thought that was him, and I couldn't remember. Yeah, I agree. You know what? I'll stand with my boy Reese. You know, he just made a weird choice. but yeah, I'm feeling a sweep here. I'm feeling pretty good. I agree. You know, this Marlins lineup is feisty. I mean, they proved it. This is a fun lineup. I especially like the top. You know, I like Xavier, I think is his name, Xavier Edwards, I want to say. And then Stowers is phenomenal too. So that's just a nice 1-2 punch. I would say their top four is pretty good. Or at least it was tonight. I don't know if that's their usual. But I'm feeling a sweep. I mean, I think Bayo Crochet, they're going to bounce back. They have a bit of a chip on their shoulder, something to prove. You love that for guys like them. And I'm hoping, I mean, Sandy bent us over a barrel tonight. It was bad. You cannot allow Quantrill and Junk to do the same thing. You've got to go out there. You've got to show them what's what. We've got most of the bullpen pretty much solid right now. I'm going with a sweep here. The Marlins are a team that earlier in the month I was a little scared of. I said, let's not take anything for granted. With these pitching matchups, I'm willing to get a little bit cocky and very optimistic over.
Agreed.
Our whole stream is all food right now. everybody, I'm just, no one's, everyone loves ketchup. And Emily Talks Socks is a ketchup girl and likes popcorn shrimp.
Hell yeah.
That's really good. Yeah, I saw Jules mention a fried oyster po' boy. Only had a couple po' boys in my life, but I do love that.
Red That's Sox with tomatoes and cheese.
Yeah, I think so. Down in New Orleans when I went there, I had a couple. Red Sox diehard says, I feel like we might see a no-hitter. Hopefully, we're on the right side of it. Unfortunately, the Orioles tonight, they were throwing a perfect game. This guy, it was like his 11th start young. He was throwing a perfect game against the Astros. I think he carried it into the eighth inning and unfortunately gave up a hit. But really, really good game for them. We did see, you know, we've been, you know, scoreboard watching a lot of the rivals. Not a lot of good news to report. Sorry, you know, to be the bearer of that. But yeah, I'm hoping. I mean, I think Bayo and especially Crochet, I really do see them having great games here.
Yeah, I mean, gun to my head, I would bet on a sweep. But this Marlins team, I mean, they could put up eight for no reason. So yep. That's why I wouldn't take it to the bank. Their most winnable game was tonight, though, and it didn't happen.
Yeah,
we'll need more than two.
Mm-hmm.
We'll need more than two. The rest of the in the, you know, the next two.
If you can't get that off of Quantrill, I mean,
oh yeah,
yeah, and all three of the Marlins starters. Another interesting note that I didn't point out is all three of the Marlins starters this series actually are right-handed pitchers. So you know we won't necessarily see the lefty killing squad, although we've been seeing a whole lot of Romy, regardless of handedness, which I disagree with personally, but. You know, it depends on the pitch type, I guess. I haven't delved too deep into what Romy looks like versus righties fastballs, righties sliders. You know, it's possible that when a pitcher is out there and he's a righty throwing fastballs, maybe Romy's really good against that. You know, so I won't claim to know that. It's just vibes based, really.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know,
everybody wants Nathaniel Lau, and I'm like, they're not messing up the platoon dynasty.
Yeah. Well, it's possible he would just replace Toro in the platoon, funnily enough.
Yeah.
But someone earlier in the stream, I'm sorry I didn't see who, but or I don't remember who rather, but they mentioned that Toro is a very good bench piece. And I don't disagree with that. You know, I like Toro as a member of the organization. It's just I'm starting to get a little tired of him seeming to be our first base starting option, you know, this deep into a playoff push.
Yeah.
I can just see Breslow up in the owner suite just feeling so validated by Toro. So I'm never going to like the guy. That he was only supposed to be up for a week, and it turned into the whole season, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, he's never been good.
Do you want to hear my case for firing Breslow? This one's like
a different one this time?
Yeah. I'm trying to do one a week at least, and then we can go home. So in 2022, James Click led the Astros to the World Series and then essentially got fired after. So, you know, it could happen. You know, we could do it.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
That's the case. That's all right. I got.
I like it.
That's funny. Yeah, just as you know, a final note, Butt Munch Cookie in chat says, I see that Reese McGuire is taking matters into his own hands in Chicago. Please don't phrase it like that. If anyone's morbidly curious, you could just look up the guy on Wikipedia. I'm sure you'll find all you need to know.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll find more than you need to know.
I could describe what he was doing with a food item, but I won't. Let's just get out of here. It's getting off the rails.
Alrighty. Thank you guys so much for listening in. Thank you so much for hanging out. It's been a super active chat tonight. Funnily enough, especially after we mentioned the ketchup salsa debate, there was a lot of activity. If anyone's listening and would like to contribute after the show has been uploaded to you know, the various outlets, feel free to leave a comment or add us. Where do you stand on the condiment war? We'd love to hear it, genuinely. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We've been the Bastards of Boston. I've been Nick, joined by Terry and Doug once more. Great, great win tonight, real nail biter. Hopefully tomorrow and the next day go a little smoother for us. But until then, take care.